And good morning to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Good morning to you. Happy Wednesday of the second day of our week here on the show. We took a long three-day weekend. Yesterday was our first live show of 2022. I shared my four New Year's resolutions for a great Greater Tucson in 2022. So if you missed that, it was a fun full hour. Go and check that out on the podcast. And again, on Friday, new Tucson Police Chief Kazmar will be with us in studio for a conversation about how we don't repeat in 2022 the deadliest year that was 2021 in the city of Tucson. So some good conversations to kick off the week, some good conversations to end the week. But I am really excited for the show that we have for you today in studio in just a second. Pastor Jeff Loxton is with us, and Jennifer Tompkins is with us, the Executive Director of Tucson Refugee Ministry, to talk about the refugee situation globally and then also very locally. And then Ruben Navarrete will be with us. He's the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. We're going to talk about race and discussing race in America. I have some questions for him, and I'm sure, as always, he has answers. That's our show today. Pastor Jeff, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Zach. It seems like it was yesterday we were doing this.
Well, it almost was.
It almost was.
You and I actually ended the year together. We were together Friday on Friday's show, and that was fun. But Wednesday is usually our day together.
Yes.
You're our faith and culture contributor, pastor of Hope City Church on the 22nd Street Corridor here in Tucson, Arizona. You have been helping to curate a series across a wide variety of topics, Pastor Jeff, on how the church is a partner at the table or driving the solutions, closing and minding the gaps in our community, whether it is foster care, which we've been in the thick of, or refugee ministries and taking care of those who are foreigners, which is something that as Christians we are called to do very clearly in our scripture. So set up the conversation, and then we'll turn it over to Jennifer here in a second.
Yeah, I know. As we've been talking about these various things over the last few weeks and months, you shared an article with me, and as you shared that article related to refugee and housing, which we'll get into over these next few segments, I couldn't think of a better person than Jennifer Tompkins and the ministry that she's the executive director of to be able to share this. She's a phenomenal partner in this area within the Tucson community. And so with that, I'm excited to introduce to our listeners Jennifer Tompkins.
Jennifer Tompkins, this is also our introduction. I've heard about you and I've seen your work in the community. The executive director right before you was such a dear part of Tucson for so long, Cherie Gray, passed, tragically a couple years ago, but it feels like yesterday. But Jennifer, kick us off. Give us a sense of the global component of this issue, and then I really want to zoom in on the situation surrounding refugees in Tucson and then what we're doing in this community to meet the need.
Right. Thank you so much for having me here. This really is a global issue, and I'm glad that you have addressed it as that. Right now, there are 82.4 million people around the world who have been forced to flee from their homes. That's one in every 95 people has been had to flee from their home. I can't imagine that. But the definition of a refugee is a non-citizen who is generally outside of their home country and has experienced past persecution or has had a well-founded fear of persecution on the account of their race or religion or nationality or even membership in a social group or a political opinion. So these people are really running for their lives. I think what people in Tucson probably have heard the most about lately is Afghanistan.
Yes.
And that we are welcoming a lot of new Afghan neighbors here in Tucson. It's important to know, though, that there are refugees in Tucson from many different countries. That there are, we've got Sudanese, we've got people from Haiti, we've got people from, Syria. There's a lot of different places that we welcome refugees from. It's estimated that there are about 10,000 refugees in Tucson right now. So we have a large population population of refugees, but within the first 5 years, they become citizens. So refugees are invited in by the U.S. government.
Yeah.
So of those 82.4 million people that are displaced in the world, about 26 million of them have gone through an incredible vetting process. Mm. So years and years of interviews and background checks and all of that stuff, and they become refugees. 50% of them are children under the age of 18. So we have 26 million people worldwide that need homes. And of course, we're talking about faith in our community. And as a person of faith, I am told over and over that I'm supposed to care for the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, and the poor. And our refugees coming in are often all four of those.
That's it's amazing, those statistics. And I would say broadly that the United States remains one of the largest acceptance of refugees from around the world. That it's been a statistic for a while. Is that still true?
I would say, so that depends upon the president. So our president each year gets to determine how many people come in. There's different opinions politically. I'm not a big political person, so I usually don't address kind of what the differences are politically with our immigration, because my job is just to love the new incoming refugees and immigrants. But this year, we have a president who is welcoming in quite a few new people. So we've got our regular people who are in the resettlement pipeline, but also we had emergency resettlement with all the new Afghans coming
right.
in. So millions of Afghans fled Afghanistan when the Taliban came in. Rightfully so, their lives are in danger. Mm-hmm. They knew that if they stayed, that they would be killed. So we have over 500 new neighbors from Afghanistan here in Tucson right now.
I was going to ask you how many were placed in Tucson. The number is 500. How many total refugees, if you said that number, if you could say it again, how many refugees are in Tucson from around the world? And how many are served directly by Tucson Refugee Ministry?
Right. So there are estimated about 10,000. Once they hit about year five, they take the citizenship test and become full citizens. They are so excited to be citizens here. You see American flags in all of their apartments and houses. And they're no longer counted as refugees. So it's hard to tell the exact number, but it's estimated about 10,000 here in Tucson. We probably reach out to at least 500 of those families. So we are consistently working with refugees all over the city.
That might be a great place, actually, to take a pause. I want to keep us on time, but I have so many questions for Jennifer Tompkins, the Executive Director of Tucson Refugee Ministry right here in Tucson. When we come back, we'll talk about some misconceptions, but more importantly, talk about how TRM serves those refugees here in our community and what it could look like for us as listeners to partner with you in that. America is a generous country. It is a big country. We are big enough to welcome in the poor, the widow, the orphan. But it takes resources and it takes partners to meet those resource needs. And I think the faith community is and has been at the front lines of this work for a very long time. So it's fun to have a 21st century real-time conversation about that with Jennifer Tompkins. We'll be right back after a short break here on Tipping Point, AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to come. Don't forget, Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist syndicated around the country, is with us at the end of the hour to close us out. We'll be right back. Much more to come.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson, located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater. Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love? Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition. In his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest, Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now.
Hi, this is Tom Sullivan. Join me weeknights from 7 to 10 for the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We're with Jennifer Tompkins in studio, as well as our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton. Jennifer Tompkins is the executive director of Tucson Refugee Ministry. We're talking broadly about the refugee situation globally, and then as we zoom into Tucson, we talked about how many individuals and families are here in Tucson, again, vetted in, welcomed in, and located by the U.S. government. They're here. They're allowed to be here. We welcome them to be here. There are 500 Afghani refugees from that particular crisis here in Tucson. Tucson Refugee Ministry serves 500 families, about 500 families at large. They can come from Sudan, Haiti, African countries, a wide mix of backgrounds. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about how Tucson Refugee Ministry as an organization works to serve these refugee families, and give us a glimpse of maybe how we could partner with you on that mission.
Yeah. So many of you probably have seen the news, and you see how when the refugees came from Afghanistan that they jumped into planes with little or no possessions. So they're coming without their families, they're coming without the language, they're coming without the culture, without the religious support systems, without community support systems such as friendships. And they start really below the level of our poverty, of our living poor here, because they don't have a lot of those cultural norms that we normally have. So they come in with some challenges. And right now, the biggest challenge is housing. Our largest resettler, so we have four resettlement agencies in Tucson. The largest resettler is International Rescue Committee. We help out quite a bit with what they do. They right now have several families, like 25 to 30 families, that are waiting in a hotel for housing. Housing is a huge issue, and really, you can't start your life without a place to live. English enough to get a living wage job is another challenge. Lack of certifications in the U.S. to work back in your profession. Say you were a doctor or a lawyer or something back in your home country, but you aren't able to do that here. That's another challenge. Lack of familial and community support systems is a huge challenge, and that's where we come in. We are amazing at providing relationships and support systems through things like family partnerships, baby partnerships, driving lessons — that's not my favorite, I don't do the driving lessons — tutoring for adults, and tutoring for adults in citizenship and English, children in school. Of course, you'd imagine if they've been running for their lives and sitting in a camp waiting, their schooling is behind. And English help, definitely. Social groups for our men, women, and teens especially. Our family events, our international kids camp that happens every summer, with summer activities for the kids, and safe activities for those kids and teens. These are the things that we're doing to pour in all year round, along with the provision of some just realistic needs, you know, food, clothing, all of those kinds of things.
And just to maybe make and clarify what we are speaking about, the refugee component, the relocation process, the vetting process, that is different from the asylum seeking process that is happening on our southern border.
Right.
And I think many would conflate the two, but those are two different processes, two different systems, two different sets of partnerships. Is there any clarification on that might be important?
Yeah. So there are a lot of different ways to come to the United States. There's a lot of great information if you go onto some of the government websites. They'll tell you a little bit more. But a lot of people, I think, in their mind think a lot of about border crossers, people who come across the border and just try to integrate into society without going through legal means. But there is a perfectly legal process of seeking asylum. So you could come to the United States and right away file a claim for asylum, saying that you are being persecuted in your home country and that you can't return because there's a risk of you dying while you're there. And we see that some of the Afghans are coming in via that way, that they are called APA, or Afghan Parolee Applicants, which means that they know that they're coming from a country of persecution. They're coming in as asylum seekers. But we also have other ways that they're coming in. So a lot of our applicants that are coming here to the United States are SIVs, which is Special Immigrant Visa, which means that they worked for the U.S. military. They were interpreters, drivers, you know, somehow helped the U.S. military there in Afghanistan. And they already have conditional citizenship. So they had applied for their SIV status. They already have conditional citizenship. Some of them, while they were still there, already applied for citizenship so that they could become American citizens, knowing that because they helped the U.S. military, their lives would be at danger. So the regular refugee process, just aside from Afghanistan, is that anyone who goes through the UN's vetting process, so years of interviews and background checks and all of that, can become a certified refugee that's able to be resettled in any of the countries willing to resettle.
Right. A very intentional and complex process on the refugee side. We are doing a two-week, two-part conversation with Jennifer Tompkins because there's no way that we could do everything that we wanted to do in our normal two segments, and it totally makes sense now that we've dug into this. Before I turn it back over to Pastor Jeff for kind of some final thoughts, our faith and culture contributor on this program, give me the top two or three ways that our listeners, whether they are a part of a faith community or not, could partner with the work that you're doing in meeting these needs.
We love and need volunteers, people who want to be the hands and feet, just to be there with the refugees, help to provide them support systems. And another way is donating so that our programs can continue to run. We are working on setting up a community center in the Amphi neighborhood that would be able to serve the Amphi neighborhood and the refugees that live there. And so just getting involved. We definitely need people who want to volunteer, and definitely need people who will donate and pray. Praying for our ministry would be wonderful.
So volunteers, funding as always. Where can people go on your website, find out those opportunities, reach out to you specifically?
Sure. There is a donate button on our website that you can go to donate for Tucson Refugee Ministry. There's also a whole section on volunteering that describe all the different volunteering opportunities. But also there is a Refugee 101 on our website, which is a more in-depth information about who refugees are and our immigrants that are coming to the United States and who we serve.
Perfect. Jennifer Tompkins, thank you again for making the time here this first week of the year to come in with us and talk about, in the first segment, give us the situation, what's going on, how many refugees are here, how many are here from Afghanistan, how your ministry is serving them, and talking about how we can assist you in that mission. And we'll see you next week for part two.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I want to turn back over to Pastor Jeff to close us out, and we'll get you as close to the mic as we can, Pastor, but tell us a little bit about how, as a leader of a church, what is the role of the Church as a Faith Institution of serving these needs, of connecting resources, Jennifer mentioned, really the call in our scriptures to serve the foreigner, the widow, the orphan. Give us the perspective on this issue from a church angle.
Yeah, I mean, whether you are in a geographical area where you see this in your congregation, your community, or you're removed from it, there's an opportunity for us to partner with people like Tucson Refugee Ministry that are already doing that work. It is an integral part of the culture in Tucson, and I think as such, it's definitely going to be a part of our future in whatever ways we choose to embrace it. But I think seeing the work that Tucson Refugee Ministry is doing and the massive volunteers there, it's a phenomenal opportunity for us to work in some very simple and tangible ways to be able to embrace people that are in our community that otherwise wouldn't have that opportunity for embrace.
There's an interesting perspective out there. I saw it on my Twitter yesterday of people saying, you know, because I talk a lot about housing on this program, is
yeah.
Well, we don't have enough because we're trying to get the homeless into housing, we're trying to get refugees into housing, and that's the problem, is that there's too much and too little. I don't think that's the right perspective on the issue. I think we need to ask, what are we called to do, and then
sure.
How do we create more resources to solve more problems? I think a scarcity mindset is certainly probably not... not the mindset the church should have or that the church should lead out on, I imagine.
Well, you use the word scarcity, and I think that's an important word because I found in our history as a church and individually as a family that when we choose to give our resources away in the heavenly realms, I think our Creator sees that and endows us with more resources. And so whether someone comes from a faith background or not, maybe there's a challenge there to be able to say, hey, I've been given so much. I've been entrusted with so much. How can I share that with the people around me? And just watch what happens as more resources come your way. I think there's lots of opportunity for us to be able to bless and encourage, in this case, the refugees in our community.
I think these, as we wrap up, I think these conversations are really important because in today's culture, we often think, well, how does the private sector solve problems, or how does, you know, the government solve problems? And there's this, you know, massive tension on who's right and who does mm-hmm. more. But for hundreds of years, certainly in this country, the church and nonprofit organizations have been partnering mm-hmm. As a third way to meet those needs. And I think when the nonprofit sector and the church sector are doing that, those two institutions are at their best and are doing the best work. And we need to be talking more about how we partner with organizations like Hope City, like Tucson Refugee Ministry, to meet needs.
Too much work needs to be done to pick and choose who gets to do it and who doesn't. And I love what is happening through Tucson Refugee Ministry. They're good at what they do. And we just want to come alongside them and be a resource to them.
Our faith and culture contributor, Pastor Jeff Loxton, thank you for curating this conversation. Looking forward to seeing you both next week for part two.
Thank you.
God bless you guys and your work. Tucson Refugee Ministry, Hope City Church, your website, Pastor Jeff.
Yeah, hopecitychurchtucson.com.
When we come back from a short break, a few words from me, Ruben Navarrete, nationally syndicated columnist. On the other side of that, don't go anywhere, Tucson.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser and AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger. They opened downtown on October 20th of 2021. They're serving up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, have ice cream, milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. You can follow them on social at Little Love Burger to find out their hours, their location, just a few doors down from the Rialto Theater in downtown Tucson. And just go and support a great bunch of Tucson men and women starting a business here in our community. Always want to support those small businesses. We just said goodbye to Jennifer Tompkins, the Executive Director of Tucson Refugee Ministry, and Pastor Jeff Loxton, our Faith and Culture Contributor, Pastor of Hope City Church, to talk about the refugee situation in our community and how nonprofits and churches are working with other partner organizations to meet the need of those who are here. Again, a bit of a different process from those who are approaching our border from the south. I think that picture of what's happening there, what isn't happening there, what is happening there, is often what we think about when we hear about these issues. But there's another but similar process around refugee placement from around the world. And I think the United States continues to be, whether it is a Republican or a Democratic president, to be honest, and it does go up or down depending on who the president is often, America at large still is one of the largest recipients, welcomers of those who are fleeing some of the most tragic and difficult situations in our world today. And I think it was a worthwhile conversation. I'm going to talk with Ruben Navarrete in a few minutes about race and race issues in America from his vantage point as the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. But related to the last topic, I really enjoyed an article by Peggy Noonan. By the way, I read WAPO, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and other publications on both the right and the left of our political spectrum. The Wall Street Journal is home to the writing of Peggy Noonan. I'm a huge fan of Peggy Noonan as a writer. I just think she puts out some really good work. And she wrote a piece over the weekend called 10 Things to Love About America, an immigrant's social media posts express love for the land to which he came. And there was a man by the name of Amjad Massad who came to America in January of 2012 from Amman, Jordan. He was 24 at the time. And he remembers settling in New York with very little. He says, "I landed in the U.S. 10 years ago with nothing but credit card debt. After one startup exit, one big tech job, and one unicorn, I genuinely believe that it wouldn't have been possible anywhere else in the world. Here are 10 things that I love about this country. Number one, work ethic. Why do you pour everything into a job even when it's seemingly thankless? It was like asking fish, what is water? The work ethic here in this country. Number two, lack of corruption. In the 10 years in the U.S., I've never been asked for a bribe, and that's surprising. Number three, a win-win mindset. People don't try to screw you on deals. They play the long game and align incentives in such a way that everyone wins. Number four, rewarding talent. If you're good, you'll get recognized. The market for talent is dynamic. America is obsessed with properly rewarding talent. 5, open to weirdos. Weirdos thrive without being crushed. We employ people with the most interesting backgrounds, dropouts to artists. They're awesome. 6, forgiveness. Weird and innovative people have to put themselves out there, and part of that, they're going to make mistakes in public. The culture here values authenticity. If you're authentic and open about your failures, you'll get a second and third chance. 7, basic infrastructure. Americans take care of their public spaces. Parks are clean, subways and buses run on time, and utilities and services just work. 8, optimism. When you step foot in the U.S., there is a palpable sense of optimism. People believe that tomorrow will be better than today. 9, freedom. Clearly a cliche, but it's totally true. None of the above works if you're not free to explore and tinker, to build companies, and to move freely. I still find it amazing that if I respect the law and others, I can do whatever I want without being compelled or restricted. 10, access to capital. It's a lot harder to innovate and try to change the world without capital. If you have a good idea and track record, then someone will be willing to bet on you. The respect for entrepreneurship in this country is inspiring, and it makes the whole thing tick. Again, a 10 things to love about America list put together by a man named Amjad Massad, who came to America in January 2012 from Amman, Jordan, he's 24 years of age. And I thought this was an interesting transition between the first two parts of our hour, where we talked about refugees and individuals who immigrate here either by choice or out of persecution. And our final segment on race in America, because I think that we forget that while we are a fish in this water, while we know the work that is left to do in this country, sometimes, I think often maybe, it's valuable to step back and look at this country through the eyes of someone who is here. Who is here and not of this country, but are waving flags outside of their homes, who come here because this is the safest, still most free, most welcoming, most entrepreneurial, most adventurous, most opportunistic country in the world, who come here and see the difference in how we do life and business and how other people do life and business. And certainly one of our most patriotic duties as Americans is to look at our system and always make sure it's improving and always closing the gaps and always doing what we can to create opportunity and to address wrongdoing and to figure out how to keep everyone moving forward. But in doing that, we can't forget that there are hundreds of thousands of people who come to this country who have a top 10 list of why this place is better than anywhere else in the world, and why they are here on purpose and are thankful to be here. And I think sometimes I forget that. And I think that we need to be remembering that, and we need to be celebrating who we are as a country while continuing to make things better. And I think often it is the refugee, it is the immigrant, it is those people who come here that are often the most patriotic reminders of who we are as a country and what we have. So forgive me for waxing philosophical, forgive me for waxing poetic, but again, this piece by Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal, 10 Things to Love About America, was certainly a good lens for me to enter the week on, but I think also a good transition between two segments about refugee and refugee ministry here in our local area, and this final piece of the conversation we're going to have today with Ruben Navarrete about race in America. 10 Things to Love About America. We'll be right back after a short break. That's what's on the other side. You're listening to Tipping Point on AM 1030, KVY The Voice. We'll be right back.
From Oro Valley to Vail and everywhere in between, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition. In his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest, Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, Hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Tipping Point here on AM 1030 KVUI. The Voice is what you're listening to today. Again, check us out on the podcast. You can listen back to all of our shows every day, a couple of hours after our show live. Matt Neely is a magician at getting the podcast up in just a few hours after that, so you can catch anything that you missed as you're driving around, working at your office, wherever you're listening to us. You can follow us there on the podcast. We talked with Tucson Refugee Ministry in the first half of the show. An immigrant writes the top 10 things to love about America. I read that list in the last segment. And we are just awaiting now in the green room Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino communist in the country, to talk to us about race and race issues in America and how we manage those conversations in a way that is productive and moves us forward as a country. So I'm looking forward to that. A good mix of conversations. Tomorrow, we're going to have someone from the Arizona Multifamily Housing Association with us on the show to talk about a decision that Tucson Mayor and Council will make in the coming weeks around source of income protections, which basically means requiring landlords of any size in the city of Tucson to accept housing choice vouchers, Section 8 vouchers, Social Security vouchers, so on and so forth. We'll talk about what that means in the community. We'll talk about the impacts of that, and we'll get their view on it. And then don't forget, Tucson Police Chief Chad Kazmar, new Tucson Police Chief, will be with us on Friday to let us know how he plans to not let the most deadly year in Tucson city history happen again. So that's what's coming up the next couple of days. Now in the green room with us is Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country. Ruben, happy new year to you, sir.
Zach, great to be with you. Happy new year.
So an interesting conversation that I think we have today. Every week you kind of send me, here are the things that I'm thinking about, that I'm pitching to the national publications that I'm syndicated across. And you and I had a conversation earlier in the week, and I said, Ruben, it really seems to me that lately, just about everything that you are pitching, writing about, researching, talking about, deals with race and race issues in America. And why is that? And so I said, Ruby, maybe we talk about that more broadly, of why you think that this is important to be talking about. And to kick us off, Ruben, I'm starting to feel like in America that my friends on the left want to only talk about race in America, and my friends on the right want to talk about anything but race in America. And certainly Ruben in the center has a more complex view on the conversation we should be having. It's either all-consuming or non-existent, depending on where you show up on the political spectrum. Yet you're talking about it consistently. Why should we be talking about issues of race in America today?
So it's a good question here. I disagree a little bit, Zach. I think the right talks about race all the time. It just talks about it in a way that's different from the left. It was the right that gave us the Willie Horton ads, the anti-immigration rhetoric, you know, Donald Trump talking about Mexicans being criminals. The right wing does a lot of racial demagoguery. You know, when Jesse Helms, who was a Republican, put an ad on television, a pair of white hands holding a rejection letter criticizing affirmative action because he was running against a black opponent. Let's be clear, Zach, my friend. We could go back and forth forever. The Republicans and the right wing and the conservatives play race games all the time. So nobody's walks into this wedding with a white dress, right? Like, oh my God, clutch the pearls. I can't believe the Democrats are talking about race. We never do that. So, of course, both parties do it. I was listening yesterday to a radio interview. Hugh Hewitt, who's on your station, was interviewing somebody, and they were talking about Ron DeSantis going after the cultural vote. And what has happened is in the Republican Party, the race conversation has been wrapped up into culture talk. So when you hear the word culture, that C word, culture, it's really code for things like critical race theory, you know, or affirmative action, or any of those racial issues. Even immigration gets thrown into that. And so that's become the way, in a very sneaky way, that politicians talk about race, but they label it something else. They label it brand X culture. So I think people do it. I just want a seat at the table. I feel like if I don't talk about race and write about race in a really insightful way, providing context, then it's unilateral disarmament. And I basically cede the ground to Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and a bunch of morons who don't understand anything about race. And I'm not comfortable living in a world where only white men talk about race.
Well, I think that's how I started the interview you're commenting on what you see on the right side of America's political heart. But you are you're in the center, but on the left of you, Ruben, there's a lot of people talking about race, and I think critical race theory at its core says that there are systems that are messed up because of how we have dealt with race, and that is everything can be tied back to that, and everything is based on race and on politics around race. So you're certainly not alone in talking about race. What is the conversation that you think we should be having?
I think that we would be better served to talk a lot about class, about economic differences, about those are really sort of the difficult subjects. We find it difficult to talk about whether a wealthy African-American family has better opportunities than a poorer one. When you take race out of the equation and it becomes about economics and money, people would much rather talk about race than money. So I think we should talk about class differences. I think we should talk about elitism more and more, which isn't about money. It's about the magazines that you read and the radio stations you listen to. And, oh, I only get my news from NPR. And the other day I was watching PBS, you know, and, oh, I remember once at Harvard they taught me blah, 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 right? So I'm familiar with that world. I run in that world. It gives me the creeps. It gives me the willies. I don't like elitism. I think that those are the conversations that we avoid. It's interesting now that I think about it, Zach, there are a lot of very difficult subjects we don't want to talk about, so we always default to race.
Agreed. Agreed. And I think about, you know, when we talk about race in America, which often has some correlation, I think, to class, we talk about it in a way that doesn't help us move forward. We continue to have the same conversations, but I think pragmatically, okay, how do we solve gaps? How do we solve those things? You wrote an interesting piece about Winsome Sears as Virginia's new lieutenant governor, and I think your kind of pitch on that article was reflective of your position overall. Tell us what you think about how the national narrative is shaping up around Virginia's new lieutenant governor, who is African-American and a really, really great background.
So I think the Democratic Party is a hot mess, but also the Republican Party is a hot mess. And I think that, you know, the Republican Party is off base is Winston Sears is an African-American woman, an immigrant from Jamaica. She wants to lean in to those things. She wants to have that conversation. She wants to make the argument to America that African-Americans would be better served in the Republican Party. She wants to make the argument that the Republican Party is not the anti-immigrant party. That's actually the Democratic Party that keeps out immigrants to protect its union buddies. And she wants to make these arguments, and I say go for it. Absolutely. Would love to hear it. But I feel that she is a lone voice in the wilderness because Republicans don't want to have that conversation. They are so shell-shocked, Zach, at being called nativist and racist. They run away from race. The way I've put it in a column once before is the Republicans will fold at a poker table even when they're holding a full house. They have an African-American woman who's an immigrant from Jamaica who's about to be lieutenant governor of Virginia, and they want to treat her like she's a white male, as if somehow that's more enlightened. And she's screaming at the top of her lungs, I am not a white male. Lean into it. Let's talk about these issues. Let's make the sales pitch, the marketing pitch. Are Republicans just stupid, Zach? I mean, you talk about leaving money on the table. It seems to me that they need to listen to Winston Sears. The only problem with her is that we can't clone her. She's the future of the Republican Party. And it's just dumb for, in my world, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post to hire Ruben Navarrete, the grandson of a Mexican immigrant, and say, you know what, we want you to write columns that could be written by George Will. Because you'll feel better about yourself, and we'll feel better about ourselves, and we won't have to deal with angry phone calls from, you know, nativists who want us to fire you and then shut that Mexican up. I do not understand how the game is played. If you're holding aces, play the aces. Don't fold.
I think one of the things that is interesting to me that I'm trying to process through, there was a research done in the fall of last year, Ruben, around folks who live in cities and metro areas, so suburbs, urban areas, so on and so forth. And it took into account all backgrounds, races, ethnicity, socioeconomic, so on and so forth, and found a lot of commonality. Whether it was concerns around housing and how to make housing happen, concerns around economic opportunity. There was some concern about critical race theory in the schools, Ruben, just by the numbers that crossed black, brown, and white as a way of saying it, that it was not clearly delineated where there were, you know, whites and Angles on one side and African-Americans and Latinos and Hispanics on the other. I feel like sometimes the way that we talk about race clouds the data and clouds the issues by assuming that everything is lined up around identity. And I think that we are living in a much more complex society. And we are missing the forest through the trees. And that's my hang up. How do we address issues of race but not lose the forest through the trees? And the data tells me, Ruben, that we might be losing the forest through the trees and completely misunderstanding the American people because we are really focused on issues of color.
I agree with you. I don't think the media does a great job at complexity. It does a terrible job at complex issues, no matter what the issue is. I think the way to start this is, for instance, I've had many enlightening conversations with my Asian friends about race, about the fact that they fit into racial categories, both, you know, biologically, sociologically, and yet they feel like whenever there's an act of racism against Asians, sometimes an outright hate crime, like the shootings in Atlanta, that the media doesn't handle it well, glosses over it, because the media only sees racism in black and white terms. So I guess the way to do it is, instead of me trying to figure it out, is I should talk less and listen more, and I should talk to my African-American friends, Asian friends, white friends, everybody, and just sort of ask you, what should we talk about in terms of race? You know, is it something we never talk about? How do we talk about it in a more complex, respectful way? But that seems to be the best way. We'd have a much better politic if politicians in Arizona and around the country talk less and listened more. Talk less, listen more. And so we don't have to show up with all the answers. It's not up to Zach and Ruben to solve this. We need to go talk to more people and ask them, okay, what bothers you? As an Asian American, what bothers you about the American conversation on race? Oh, I get it. It's you're neither black nor white. You don't fit in either category. And you can't get the time of day from the media. So that is, I think, where we start. And that's how you have a more honest conversation. Less talk, more listen.
Now, certainly my goal with this segment is to ask you the question and to listen. But I'm also, you know, I look at, and we see this with Latino and Hispanic voters, ultimately they are not tied to a party because they are asking someone, somewhere, this is by the data, to make housing, jobs, and quality of life happen. And if we only look at our American people in terms of what they look like, we're missing the fact that pragmatically, real life people are asking, okay, these are good conversations to have, they need to happen, but we ultimately need to be making people's life better out of those conversations. And that's what I wanted to kick off with you, Ruben. Ruben, the music is in my ears to head out here. Ruben in the Center is your podcast. People can go and follow you. Where can people find you, Ruben?
Yeah, RubenNotRented.com. And as you said, Ruben in the Center is the podcast. Got some great guests lined up in these days to come. Thank you, Zach. Always great to be with you.
Likewise, Ruben. Happy New Year to you, and we'll see you next week. Tucson, great. That does it for us here on the program. Hugh Hewitt's up next. He was mentioned just a minute ago. Bill Buckmaster at noon. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll talk housing in the region with the Arizona Multifamily Housing Association. Stay safe out there, Tucson. Keep us on your dial. We'll see you Thursday.